The following podcast is a part of the Spin Studio Network. Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of Empowered. This week's episode is for my single ladies. I have Stacey June on the episode today, and she is the author of Single Pringle, a book that explores how we can flourish in our solo selves and dive into a relationship with our own intuition. Stacey is also the creator of the successful podcast and radio show The Thinker Girls and The Stacey June Show, not to mention TV presenter and radio broadcaster. After graduating at NIDA, getting her certification as a life coach and EFT tapping coach, Stacey now directs her energy into her coaching, business and membership program, built for women to find practical ways to get in touch with their truth and lead lives that are fulfilling, honest and courageous. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Stacey June. Thank you so much for coming onto the show, Stacey. And I first want to kind of preface where I'm coming from going into this conversation, which is to say that I have been single for a very small amount of my life because I met my husband, my now husband, when I was 19. So, you know, when I started this podcast, I really wanted to speak to all different walks of life. And I guess my experience of life has been quite heavy and dark in some ways, but then in other ways, you know, finding my soulmate at 19, I think that's been quite a different experience to a lot of people. So I'm so glad to have you on the podcast where you can talk about what it's like and the taboos and to educate what it's like for women to be single.
It's funny because I think the very first thing I want us to walk away with from this chat today is that we're less separate than we think. Because the conversation around the book really does begin as, and it's you know, I don't want to underestimate or not acknowledge those listeners that may feel sometimes not seen in their single status and their single woman status, because the book dives into this. And so it's really important that it is acknowledged. And I really think it's great that you've done that. But I suppose what I really want to kind of put as a bit of an overarching umbrella to our chat and your introduction is that finding a sense of comfort in your solo self is so important to do regardless of whether you are in a single status relationship-wise or you're in a relationship. And I want to just also make sure that those of you that are listening today that may be in a relationship that aren't happy, also going to fall under a lot of the things we talk about. There may be parts of you that you haven't explored. There may be things that you're scared to explore. There may be ideas around what single feels like that will really apply in this conversation today. So I really want to open that up and just be encouraging everybody whilst we want to put a spotlight and give some love to our single friends that this may apply to you in ways that you didn't even realize did. You know, it is a really big deep dive into what it's like in our solo time, in our solo self. And that can be explored in all, you know, in all different areas or in different relationship statuses.
For sure. Thank you for saying that. I think I am really excited to explore that with you and talk about, I guess, having the similar feeling of, yes, I'm lonely, but I'm in a relationship, or I'm alone and I'm lonely, or vice versa. It's like making that, I guess, finding solace and contentment with being independent. So I'm really excited to flesh that out with you today. But can we start and maybe you could walk us through a bit of a snapshot of your experience of being a single Pringle and how this has all kind of eventuated for you?
It was my worst nightmare. You know, I was in a long-term relationship and I wanted to get married and have kids. I didn't understand, you know, just, I suppose, how to do relationships. I didn't have great examples. So I had this real conflicting place in my 20s where I was in a long-term relationship, but I didn't know how to do it. And I didn't know much about myself. And I was finding it really hard to figure out who I was in a relationship that I didn't know how to do. Right. So I did everything I could across that kind of 7 to 8 year relationship to avoid being single, because two things. One, it meant that I would have to navigate who I was and really look at some truths. And like you said, you've gone through a lot of your own personal journey in terms of deep diving. And that's a tricky thing to do on your own. You know, we need to identify that whilst I say we are more similar, it is a really hard thing to go and do the work when you're on your own. But I also think that there's a real opportunity to do it on your own. So I was in a relationship that I suppose I had a heap of fun times in, but also I knew deep down in my gut wasn't going to be a long-term thing for me, but I told the world otherwise. I did everything I could to try and navigate the traditional steps of what a relationship is taught to you to look like in your 20s. I didn't know any other option. I didn't know that you didn't have to get married. I didn't know that you could have open relationships. I didn't know that you could be single and happy. I didn't have these examples in front of me. Now, I'm not saying that I've gone into, you know, like those kinds of explorations in all areas of my life, but there was so much more on the menu that was not and isn't served to many of us. So we feel really stuck and we stay in relationships that are not serving us. And for me, it wasn't just not serving, it was toxic, and at times it was quite abusive. Right. So it was really a situation that I found myself in that one day I just decided I knew I needed and wanted more, and I needed to trust the unknown, because the other alternative was to stay in the same. And the same was not serving me. So it was less of a, I became so unhappy in that relationship that it was less scary to leave it than it was to stay in it. Right. And that really transpired through me starting to find things that I liked separate from the relationship. So I started to find work that I was enjoying. I started to meet different like-minded people that did meditation or were interested in working on themselves. Some people had even done development courses in their teens. You know, I just met these people that were like just completely different to what I was surrounded with. And it was just across a couple of years. And at the time, you know, my partner was also meeting those people. We both enjoyed the company. It wasn't like I completely kept everything separate, but I started to just get confidence in a different option. Sure. And then slowly but surely, I ended up becoming single. And I was single for many, many, many years. And I think for the first probably 2 or 3 years, I continued to wait for this almost like this gift that I took the risk and that I'd done the work. And so then I was waiting for someone to walk through my door to give me my tuppence for changing my life. And what happened was, is I was doing self-development work, but still deep down waiting for somebody to walk in and make me be less comfortable in my own company. So it was a really big ride. And and that's why I wrote the book, because I felt like those experiences and those honest learnings, you know, this isn't a book where it was like every single moment I felt fabulous. That was so, it's so not the case. So across those 5 or 6 years, I had some moments where, you know, I changed. I was like at times desperately wanting a relationship. And then over the years, I became less desperate and more kind of conscious about it, but trusting and surrendered in the process too. So I just want to clarify, I feel like also you don't have to be single and then never want a relationship. But I do think that you want to land into a place where you're single and your happiness doesn't depend on it.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point to make. And I guess a really tough or difficult place to land on when you're finding contentment, I guess that's a journey in of itself. What are some of the more challenging motions a woman who, because in my eyes, I feel like if you're in your 20s and you're single, it's like, oh, that's cool. Like that's so accepted, even celebrated, go enjoy yourself, et cetera, et cetera. But as soon as you hit that 30 mark and beyond, it just becomes this expectation of from celebrating that you're single to what's wrong with you, why are you single? And I can imagine that just presents a whole heap of challenges that and pressure on women, not to mention the biological clock, which I want to ask you about as well. But what are some of the other, I guess, taboo or society pressures that women face being single in their 30s?
Yeah, it's really foul when you think about it. You know, it is such a good point that you are kind of painted that in your 20s and being single and fabulous is such a glamorous situation. But the reality is, even in those years, you're still feeling like you're still feeling like that you're
doing
not
it right.
Living as successfully. Yeah, you're not living as successfully as those that are. So even if that time of your life is the, I guess, most acceptable society norm, it's still not the creme de la creme of how to be a woman. And, yes. You know, how to be a woman is that you have found somebody and that somebody loves you and preferably a straight man. You know what I mean? So these are all the kinds of these stories, these scripts, these societal norms that have been fed to us. Yeah. So even though I think your 20s, let's just separate the 20s and 30s for a second and 30s kind of into 40s, I want to also just kind of tip the hat to those of you in your 20s that feel like you need to be living this single fabulous life because that's the one chance you have.
Yeah.
It's also kind of really a bit of a head F. I don't know if you can you swear on this show.
You can
but
swear.
A bit of a it's a bit of a head fuck, you know, because you kind of feel like you're supposed to be loving it and then many of you are sure as I would and not. Yep. So then you're living this picture. But deep down in your heart, you would prefer to be hanging with, I mean, this was me. I was 28 or 29 and I was partying, but I also know that my favorite Saturday nights was sitting at home with my best friend and her husband and he was cooking us meals and there was no chance I was going to meet anybody, but they were my home and that was the kind of, setup I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in your 20s, you're kind of fed that that's what you love. But I think I need to acknowledge that it may be a bit of an act for many. And then moving into your 30s, I think if you are you've been single for a while or you then become single, there is this there's two parts to this, right? Your 20s, I feel like you're finding yourself, so you do put much more pressure on yourself to have it all together. Your 30s, I feel like you don't have as much pressure to have it together. So if you're not living by societal norms, it doesn't feel as hectic, but you don't have that glamorized single life thing. So there's pros and cons to both. You also have, if you want a family, this kind of new conversation, which is about freezing your eggs or trying to find a way to manage that on your own, which again is a patriarchal way to fear and scare women. Because I'm 38, I'm still trying for a family. Granted, I'm in fertility treatment, but it's male infertility. You know, it's not mine. And so it's just such an interesting conversation that is actually, again, completely misleading and not always accurate, you know. And these are types of pressures that are put on women to continue to box them in to live a life that the patriarchy would like us to live. So, you know, it is really important that we understand the stories and the scripts and the things that we aspire to are ours, that we make sure we do the work to understand that the things we desire are things we truly desire and not the things that society has told us to desire.
Love that. And I think that can be, attached to so many different societal expectations and pressures and milestones, you know, owning a house, getting engaged, having kids. There's just the list goes on. And I love having these conversations because I feel like you can walk through life and have the best intentions and yet contribute to that narrative. I know I've done it where I'm like, oh, you know, have you met anyone? And it's like, shut up. They don't need anyone to complete them. So
no,
I guess,
How's any of your business? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what if she's like screwing a guy that's so hot that she's having an absolute ball and her cup is full? And she doesn't need to explain herself. I think the other thing that's really interesting as to your point is I went the absolute opposite. So I was kind of like, when I met my husband, I was like, I don't want to get married. I don't want to conform to any of this crap. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And actually, you can still want traditional things as long as you're coming to the table with a conscious, you know, self-made decision that is, you know, it's not to say screw all of the things that, you know, screw the white dress and screw the weddings and screw all the things that, you know, you may want that are traditional constructs. I mean, I would try and tell you to screw as many of them as possible. But even I was a person that came around to some traditional elements of life because they felt good for me in those moments. Yeah. And, you know, in the end I came around and thought, oh, okay, I didn't quite want to get married, but maybe I would marry Ben. And I changed. So, you know, you can kind of merge it as long as you're choosing it.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. So let's go back to, I guess, the original question we were discussing and we kind of went on a tangent was how women can feel isolated. So can you kind of maybe share maybe one of your community, members of your community, how they have felt this pressure and what that looks like for them?
I really do think that, unfortunately, in my coaching rooms, women in their 20s are copying this the worst.
Okay.
And whilst you're pointing to that idea that this is the time you should live your life, I think the fakeness between the outside story that 20-somethings are living and the reality of how they're feeling is incredibly damaging.
Okay.
And I'm finding more people come into my coaching rooms younger and younger going, I just can't do this anymore. I feel like, you know, it's changing so dramatically that it's like I cannot be this person that I'm being told to be. And I think that a lot of the isolation is in that, you know, not necessarily just the physical loneliness and the lack of touch and the lack of that intimacy that you crave from a partner, which is absolutely paramount. It's hard, you know, that there is no kind of brushing over how difficult that part of it can be and how difficult it can be when you try and navigate not sleeping with anybody or getting off dating so you're healthy in your head / wanting that intimate connection. You know, that's really tricky. But I do find that really the most isolating times are actually less about other people and more about this kind of idea of who we are versus who we actually feel we are inside. Mm-hmm. And that talking to that isolation point, I do feel that a lot of women, young women that are coming through my coaching rooms or my membership programs or courses are really wanting to get in touch with a truth in themselves. They're really wanting to find a way to practically understand themselves through a lens that's honest and a lens that might be spiritually led or intuitively led as opposed to society led. So it is interesting because, you know, this question actually rolls onto the original conversation we're having. I think society and these ideas of what women should be doing and how they should be doing it and when is much more damaging than we realize.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, there's so much in, like you were saying before, the constructs and even going towards body image that you just want to burn to the ground because it's so damaging. And we are, I guess, I feel like for the first time in history, really discussing what marketing has done to us, what, social media has done to us and our brains and what we see as, quote unquote, the norm.
Just before you go on, could I offer some practical, I guess, some practical tips on how you can begin that process? Because I think
I'd love
the conversations and the elements of society, it's a big conversation, right? Like, and I'm a coach, I'm a practical person. I like to give people like something they can walk away with today.
I think they'll love that.
Yeah, I think the first step is really to start owning your role in it. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you are the patriarchy. That's not to say that you're voting this way or you're doing this in your workplace. It's actually trying to find tools that help you get in touch with your truth. So whether that is meditation, whether that is doing other things that allow you to get out of your head, whether that's therapy, whether that's coaching, whether that's walking or journaling. There's a whole heap of different options, and that's why, you know, I have the membership, because we do like a gym. There's different options every week, and you can try and do different kinds of activities to keep really active with this. But in order for us to get out of society's constructs and start to get out of that narrative, we need to create our own. So if you don't have anything to go to, you're going to be constantly looking externally for those validations. And that stuff's not going to stop. That's not happening, probably not in my lifetime. So the only thing that we can do from an absolute beginning point, and a really important one, is to own our part in what we can do for ourselves, which is to try and get out of that zeitgeist as much as possible. So off Instagram at a certain time of night, phones out of your room, you know, making sure you've got boundaries around social media, texting, you know, work boundaries, all this kind of stuff. So you've got a bit of a capsule, a sacred place in your home, in your heart, in your room, where you have time to just check in with who you are, what she or he or they actually are saying, and giving yourself the other option other than society, the zeitgeist, the big kind of story that we're being told. Because without that option, all you're going to be doing is looking externally. And though, as we've discussed, it's damaging. So give yourself your option.
That's beautiful. And I think, you know, you're so right in the way that, you know, out of the 12 hours that we're up and about for the day, it's always what's happening over here, what's going, what do you need, what can I do for you, oh, my kid needs this. Like, it's always about what other people's needs are, what their expectations of us are. And that's, I'm such a huge believer in checking in, tuning in, what's your intuition telling you. I do all of the check-in things that you can possibly do, because I feel like for a very long time of my life, I never did. I didn't even know you could do that. So, I mean, I think it's a beautiful place to start, checking in with what your values are. What do you need? What are your expectations of yourself? And are they realistic? And, you know, what can you do to serve yourself today? All right, step two, let's go. Coach Stacey.
So, another step would be to, I guess, the boundaries one is, I suppose, the kind of spiral on from starting to navigate that self relationship, mm-hmm. because there's certain things that will get in the way of that. So if you've started some form of, I guess, inquisitiveness or curiosity with yourself, whether you're journaling, maybe you could look for journal prompts, and you might do meditations. There's lots of free stuff. I do a free full moon meditation every month, and you can come and do journal prompts, and then you can do them for the next month. You know what I mean? You don't have to be spending all this money, or you can go the full plethora. And if you're spending $600 on a dress for a wedding, you can spend $600 on coaching or therapy. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that stage, you're already doing that. The next one would be, what's going on in your life that takes you out of that healthy headspace? What's going on in your life that doesn't support you checking in? So that could be bedtimes, that could be particular friends and family that just kind of have you doubt yourself or make you feel a bit crappy. I also talk about in my membership how boundaries don't have to be these kind of big, I don't know, like big presidential conversations. Like, they don't have to be these ginormous D&Ms. They can actually be silent, and you can just activate boundaries for yourself. So it might be, this particular friend, I only write back to when I feel like she's or he is not zapping my energy, or I don't text anyone back after 9 o'clock anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, where can you set some boundaries in place for yourself to really harness that kind of first step? And what do you need to do to protect your environment to ensure that first step is happening as regularly as possible?
Absolutely agree. That's beautiful. All right. Is that, are you going to give us three? Is there one more?
Oh, do you want it? You like it? You like to roll it around like a top three? All right. Okay. So three, the third one. So we've got identify relationship with self, or start a relationship with self, get some boundaries around that situation to protect that. And then the third one would be to follow parts of your life that feel good. So we have barometers, right? And we're constantly feeling different things. And I think there's two parts of this. one part is to follow things that feel good, but then like I'm going to contradict my point. And the other point to this third step is to not label your feelings. So we know when things feel juicy and healthy. And so there's a difference between things feeling good and comfortable and good and kind of easy. You know what I mean? So you've kind of got these parts of good, and then you've got these parts of bad. We all know how we feel bad when it feels toxic and damaging and ugly. And then we also know those feelings when we feel bad that feels healthy, hard and bad, but healthy, and you're learning and you know you're progressing. Sure. So if we take all of these labels off, we're left with this version of good, which is health. This is good for me in a meaning that I deem good, not just easy. Does that make sense? So we're not just looking for the easy option. When I say follow things that feel good, I also mean follow things that feel hard but feel healthy. So you want to continue to check in with yourself around when those things feel either kind of toxic or unhealthy versus positive and healthy, but not always necessarily simple or easy. And you want to be really trying to encourage your life with as many of those healthy feelings as possible. But I really need to reiterate that they won't all feel like you're at a bar on the Greek islands having a cocktail with a whole group of mates. You know what I mean? Like, not good doesn't always look like that. Good can also feel like I just cried my eyes out in therapy, but shit, I know more than I did before.
Yes, it's a sort of... it's a sort of eat your vegetable step. It's sort of like, oh, I don't really want to, but I will because I know it's I guess, a step in healing, a step in growth, and sometimes that's extremely uncomfortable, but you know that it's helping you heal and helping you grow.
Totally.
Okay. So I guess my next question is for those women out there who are exhausted, because I've got some close friends of mine who I feel like I watch them go through these cycles, and they go, all right, I'm going to be active. I'm going to be really open and non-judgmental and just see what's out there. And so they approach and they're open, and then it just kind of blows up in their face, and they go into the next phase and they go, yep, I am not trying anymore. I'm just going to focus on myself. And I'm going to just do the work on my own. I don't need anyone. I'm kind of closing that door. And then they get to a point where they're like, oh, shit, I probably should put myself out there. So then they go back to looking and back to being open. And I feel like I don't know what to say, because in my opinion, they are doing all of the right things. And I just want to hug them and say, I love you, and what you're looking for will happen. Be patient, continue being patient. You're being patient. I don't know what else to say to them and how to support them. And I'd just love for you to, A, maybe talk to them and what you would advise once they've reached that point of just pure exhaustion, like just fuck this, I don't even want it anymore, but also how we can support them as friends.
I love that question, Ricky. I think that that's just gorgeous. And it's such a true depiction of the experience, you know, what you're witnessing, but also what you're looking to support. So I just wanted to acknowledge that that's just gorgeous, and your friends are very lucky. Okay, so the first part of the question is the exhausted. Yeah. And I just feel it in my body. You know, when you explained that, I've been there, man. And I, as you've already probably established just by listening to me in this short time, I am a practical person. I like to be involved. There's a masculine part of me that is incredibly ambitious and very logical and likes to be able to apply herself. So when you're talking about a game of surrender and the game of love, which I believe is just as much about matched values as it is about timing, it's a very difficult part when you get to that point where you're like, I feel like I've got nothing left to do, but I'm so bloody uncomfortable with doing nothing. So what I would say is, the first thing is that your single life will go through seasons, but what you want to ensure you're doing is not repeating seasons. So it will go through moments where you will probably put yourself out there and then you'll retreat. And that's life, because guess what? Those of us in relationships, and at the time I certainly felt this, are less exhausted from this perspective because you're putting yourself out there way less, to a point sometimes to couples' detriments, where you lose that ability to put yourself out there. You actually need to work on it because you can really retreat into a relationship. Whereas for our single Pringles, it's the opposite. You're constantly, even if it's not dating, you're constantly having to feel like you're the person asking for a friend to catch up, or because your intimacy is always connected to those people around you. So it's not just the dating part you're exhausted with. You're exhausted being on your own and constantly having to work at that connection, you know? Mm. So I think the first step is to understand that it will be in seasons, and there's a reason that you feel like you need to retreat, because it is exhausting being that vulnerable all the time.
Yeah.
The other situation is then you go in, you kind of restore, you do the work, you read books, you nourish yourself, you don't go to clubs that are soul-sucking if you don't like it, to look for men. And you have those dinners with your friends. You go to your family's house in the country for the weekend. You do things that don't lean to meeting people. Like you've got to have that time. And to be fair, towards the end, I didn't even go in and out of seasons. Towards the end, that was my life. I decided to live my life unapologetically, to stop looking and just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And started to really understand that the parts of my single life that I enjoyed the most, and the people that I flirted with or had the best sex with or had the most fun with, were never ever the times that I planned or tried to look for it. It was always the night out that I had not shaved my legs, that I ended up going after work drinks, and then we kept dancing till three and I wasn't looking around at anybody, and then, you know, met somebody and blah, blah, blah. It was fun. And there'd be other times where I would flirt with somebody at a cafe, nothing would happen. I didn't sleep with them at all, but it filled my cup up for like the next few weeks, because there was just this gorgeous kind of flirtiness that is exciting and flirt. Like there's an eroticism in the simplicity of finding someone smile at you or drawing something in your coffee. Like it's everywhere, but we don't have to always be proactive or hunting for it. So my advice would be, as soon as you can, accept the seasons, but also keep leaning towards less of the looking season. And if you want to reapply that skill set, i.e. I like to be practical like me, I like to do things, I want to be semi in control, then use those parts of your personality for your own self-development. So put everything you can into building yourself to be the most ideal partner. Because what we often find is, if you're constantly focused on looking for Mr. Vulnerable, looking for Mr. Creative, looking for Mr. Established, and you're not vulnerable, you're not creative, you're not established, you're not going to create those things. So you need to be who you want to bring in. So it's better that you concentrate on becoming that person, as opposed to putting your energy in finding that person. That person will not make you those things. They will not make you feel those things. You must feel them yourself first in order to attract it. I mean, your listeners are probably familiar with the law of attraction, like attracts like. You must be the things you want. So the practical side would be better to put into yourself. The second part of your question is about how friends can support you. And my suggestion is to find friends, talking to single Pringles, that are interested in the things you are. So are interested in self-development, because you don't have to be in a relationship or out of a relationship to be interested in working on yourself, to go to a yoga class, to go to a retreat where you love this meditation teacher, or you just really want to go and do spas or have a holiday in Bali with your girlfriends. You don't need to talk relationship statuses for those to be intimate connection moments. So both ways, single Pringles, to be looking for like-minded friends that are like that, regardless of relationship statuses. And relationship girls, don't just plan the holidays with your partners. Don't just plan the weekends away with your partners, because it's not just for the single Pringle. You will benefit from having a full range, like lot of connections and intimacy with your friends as you will your partner. You will benefit from that life. So everybody wins. So don't just have the casual drink with your single girlfriend once a month. Do things that invest. Do things that they would crave to do with a partner but have no one to effing go with. Go away for the weekend. Give them your time. Yeah. You know, don't rush it and then have them have to spend all of these weekends away or do all this big stuff with their single friends that they might not have as much connection with. The other last thing I will say to that is single girls, single boys, single days, don't assume that the people in relationships aren't interested in doing some of the same stuff you do because they're in relationships. Yeah. I think this happens a bit with my friends. Like, I have a baby now. I've transitioned into a different stage of my life, but I'm still the same person. I wrote Single Pringle. I was a person that didn't necessarily believe in the traditional construct of marriage. I still want to learn about myself and connect with my friends too. So on the flip side of include your single friends include your relationship friends. Don't make it a this world and the other world. Whilst your worlds are different, you can all live much more harmoniously than I think a lot of us do.
Yeah, I love that. Love, love, love. That was beautiful. I think the listeners are going to get so much out of that. And yeah, really appreciate you sharing all that. It was very insightful. So the last time I was single, I was having to do some maths just then. It was 2009. I'm trying to think. I've never, ever experienced online dating, and my friends who are single talk about it, and it just seems so daunting. Did you have to venture in that? What are there any quick tips you can share on the online dating space?
Yes, the first tip would be, and yes, I was very much into the early stages of Tinder when it was kind of at that point where I feel like people actually met like husbands and wives on there really early on before meeting people. I did not. however, I think the first step would be to get off the app as soon as possible. So what I mean by that, what I mean by that is if you've connected with somebody, try and get it into a real life date as soon as you can give yourself a deadline. Because this kind of bullshit, and I'm sorry to kind of stereotype, but a lot of straight dudes do this. It's like time fillers. They love the intimacy of a random girl on an app. So when they're home from their long day at work, they might have a beer scratching their balls. They're just chatting to three other chicks to just, I don't know, stroke their egos.
Stroke their ego,
and then gone, ghost, you know, like see you later. We need to put in better boundaries to not allow that kind of intimacy or that part of ourselves to be shared until it's earned. So if somebody's not willing to meet you in real life, IRL, then F them off. If you're looking for something more connection, don't keep talking to them for 3 weeks without a date. Like give yourself deadline. For me, it was 3 days. If I didn't have any form of, you know, future kind of at least mention that we were going to meet up IRL, then that was it. I would say, I think this is kind of fizzled, you know, nice to meet you. Yeah. And I'd be out of there. So I think that's a big one, because I think that we often then, I think the second part of that, but it is another point, is don't put your intimacy and your vulnerability in the hands of someone that hasn't earned it. So don't start saying everything about your past relationships if this person asked you what your dog's name is. Like you need to read the room, and it's up to you to protect yourself just as much as it is up to them to treat you with respect and to be kind. But you also need to watch where they're doing that. And if they're not treating you with respect and they're not kind and they're not really at a place where they're interested in the intimacies of your past relationships and how you're hating work, then don't put it there to be disappointed later when you're not getting the response you want. You need to read the room, and you need to be honest with it, even if you're desperate or really yearning for something more. It's only going to work out way worse if you're not honest with what their actions are showing you from the beginning.
Yeah, amazing advice. I'm very ill-equipped there.
I'm very passionate about that one, because apps are a really funny way of life. And if we don't start to manage, it's like social media, like I was saying earlier, if we don't manage our role in it, it can really eat you up and really, really affect your mental health. So we've got to be super, super, super cautious and really protective of our energy space online. And the only person that can do that is you. There's nobody else that can do it. They don't know you. You've never met them. It's like a vast kind of big place out there on the online dating space. And so it's really up to you for you to be your best mate. And if you're not sure how to be your best mate, you don't back yourself, your self-worth is low, come and see me because that's what I do. We need to build that. You know, you need to have enough self-worth to be able to know that you're worth protecting.
For sure. I had something come up just then and I wanted to see how you felt about it. But I guess in my experience seeing people in relationships and people out of relationships and this whole conversation, I guess, sometimes we can it can seem like we're pedestaling relationships. And really, like, there are so many relationships that are not everything that you want, or, you know, it's almost like you kind of might get into one and go, oh, I don't feel fulfilled because I didn't feel fulfilled within my own self. So I feel like there are people out there, and I've seen it like kind of unfold within friends who get the relationship that they quote unquote wanted, but then they're in it and it's not exactly what they wanted because it's, I guess, like I said before, pedestaled, and it's just like this big shiny thing, but we don't actually know what it is. And it's like, until you find that actual person with that connection, that's what you're searching for. It's like, we need to take the weight off, or the pedestal off, the actual relationship and just kind of focus within the connection between yourself and that person.
I completely agree. And I also think we need to take the pedestal off that when you get into a relationship, the work stops. Mm. You know, relationships aren't just about if you're lucky enough to meet someone special. It also is really about whether you're ready to go into an invested, committed relationship and make it work and work at it. And you don't need to make it work. When I say make it work, I don't mean long term. I don't think long term is the pinnacle of relationships. Relationships can be short, they can be long, they will serve their time span according to what they're supposed to. So I really don't think, you know, I've even said to my husband before we got married that I'll be in this as long as we're both working on this and as long as we, you know, we are our best versions of ourselves. And then if we're not, it's time for us to look at that and walk away. I don't want to be in this no matter what. I don't want to be in this till death do us part, even if I hate myself. You know, I don't want to be. That's not what I see an invested or committed relationship being. And so I think that's the first thing. I think, you know, you've got to understand that it's not going to necessarily then all end when you're in it. And the second part is you may not be ready to work on the kind of relationship you want, because they're fucking hard. You know, my husband's moving into the coaching space, has done a lot of work on himself, has been through all kind of adversity. I'm a coach. I'm about to study therapy. I have done 20 years of different kind of study when it comes to self-development. And we find our marriage very hard. It's the hardest thing I do, is that commitment, you know, and it's raising children in it and doing all of that is really difficult for two people that didn't have the role models that of the relationship we aspire to. You know, we just didn't have the parents and the people show us the kind of relationship we are wanting to be in and that we are in. So the first part of it was attracting someone, but you've also got to be ready to be in the relationship. And I think we don't talk about that a lot. Off the back of what you were saying around it being on a pedestal, I completely agree. And I think the reason I say these parts is because it shouldn't be. It's hard. It's icky. It can be ugly. There's all parts of discomfort, whether you're single or whether you're in it. It just means that a different part of you is being flexed. And often, I know I'm talking about my personal experience, there is no way I would have been ready to really change the relationship stories I was told any earlier than I was.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So when I met him, I was ready to start that journey. I don't think I would have been ready a second before, even if I, you know, that's why I didn't meet the person, because it wasn't my time to start working on that part of my life. So it's not just about relationship status. It's also about where you're at personally in your journey, what you're working on, and what you're ready, or what the timing is for you to be moving into the next phase, not just family, kid, picket fence phase, but really changing the ancestral patterns, the, you know, the energetic imprints we have from what we learnt about relationships. You might not be ready to go there yet because it's tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. So my final question is, how did you find love? And, how did you meet your now husband?
We were set up. So it was funny because I've known this friend for a long time. Ben has known her for a while also. She's, you know, one of our very good friends now in a different way because she brought us together. But I'd worked with her in radio, and my husband also worked with her in radio at a different station. And she had mentioned to me that she knew somebody well before we ended up meeting. And actually, I don't know if many people have, I've never really told this part of the story, but Ben had gone on a couple of dates with other friends that she had put forward because I was quite busy and not really showing, I wouldn't say interest, but it wasn't at that time. Like I said,
wasn't the right timing.
With work, and there was just so much going on for me. So it was funny because, though, when the time did happen, I was dating again. I'd had about 6 months off from dating, and we had brunch, and we'd been meaning to have brunch since I'd moved to a different city and I was living away from home. So when I contacted her originally, it was to kind of make her like-minded, like a friend in the new city I was living in. And then 12 months later, we had not had a chance to meet. She's quite high up at the radio station I was at. I was on air. We were super busy. And so when we finally met, I'd gone through this entire, this kind of journey with my dating. I'd taken myself off the radar and just really wanted to concentrate on my own life, and felt the kind of in-out part of the dating world, me kind of being in out and out of it, was just too confusing. So when we finally caught up, I was ready, you know, and the timing was right. It wasn't just about Ben and I. It was about so many more things about the timing of that catch up with that friend that then had her tell me about this person. I was dating a couple of people at the time, and ironically, one was really kind of a yin energy and one was a real yang energy. And I was speaking to a kinesiologist that I was working with at the time, and she was like, well, it's really good to know that you are interested in both of those energies, but what you want is a combo of both. And Ben is exactly that. You know, my next step was to meet Ben, and he was an absolute combo of both. He is really beautifully yin and super feminine, and then incredibly masculine and strong in his kind of testosterone, his masculinity. He has a really lovely balance of that. And so when we met, I kind of asked her to get him to message me via email so I would save all of the emails, because I think I knew in my heart that there was something special, and I'd not even met him. So now we have all of the email chain of our first chat, so it wasn't just on text or whatever, and he had actually also saved all of the texts after we moved from email. So I would muck around with stuff. I would be like, get him to email me. You know, I just was at that point where I was like, I can play. But I think deep down, I was saying I was playing, but I think deep down I knew I would want to keep these one day. And so, we met and we were engaged 9 months later.
Wow. Beautiful. That is awesome. I love your story. I love what you're doing. And I am so thankful for your time today. If you wanted to find Stacey, you can find her at Stacey June. We'll link all your details in the show notes below. And we're doing an exciting giveaway, so hang back to hear about that. Thank you, Stacey.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. They were such really thought out questions, considering how you started the show, you know, saying I'm not even sure how to kind of navigate this. And they were so lovely. And, you know, your listeners and, like I said, your friends are so lucky to have you in their space. So it's been a really nice time. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'll make sure I remind them. All right. Thanks, Stacey. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Stacey. And I guess if you are single, you learned a little bit more about yourself and find a little bit more contentment with how amazing you are doing navigating a challenging time that I think a lot of women feel a lot of pressure to be in different situations at different points of their life. So I think you're doing an awesome job, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Would love to hear your feedback. If you have any, just head over to @empoweredwithrevy on Instagram. We're also going to be doing a giveaway with the Single Pringle book that Stacey June is the author of, as well as one of her workshops, which is basically a 2022 planner where you will be fleshing out how to live more intuitively next year. It's valued at about $200. So head to Empowered with Revy on Instagram. I'll link it down below and you can enter to win that amazing package. We're going to announce it on Thursday, the 18th of November. If you wanted to find Stacey, again, she's linked below. I'm going to be leaving you guys now with our affirmation of the week. I'd love for you to take a deep inhalation in and repeat after me. I am a strong, beautiful, and independent woman. Yes, you are. I hope you have a wonderful week. Love you. Bye.